January 29, 2024, it's a Watch for Pedro show.
creep, and her teeth stripped her, and her that she happily made me dinner. I would set the table, either pretending that I didn't notice that every spoon she had was twisted and fries was twisted. Some of theirs.
Watt from Pedro Show. Happy Monday, fuckhead Watt. I'm almost 20. May it'll be 20, what, 3 years? And I'm still blowing clams. Got to turn the monitor off, Watt. Started off with Autumn Leaves. This is an excerpt live. November 28, 1962, John Coltrane. And then we had Lost with She, Zombie. And because of those Skype, those Estonian engineers with their Skype invention, I got with me, all the way from Citrus County, Florida, Dan Fox, welcome aboard.
Thank you very much.
Absolute. And got to give credit, Graham in England, the Fence Post collaborator. You've put out some stuff. Please bring your earliest musical recollection, Dan.
I think that the earliest, I thought about this, and I think that the longest, the oldest memory that I have that's specifically about music is being in a car in the back seat with my parents and hearing the song Owner of a Lonely Heart by Yes. And I just remember really liking that song. It just really stuck with me for some reason.
Yeah, I remember that song. It was kind of their, I don't know, kind of new wave song. Or, I mean, opposed to the roundabout thing and stuff, you know.
Well,
little less notes. You know what I found out about that band? It was run by the bass player.
Really?
I know, that's what I thought, yeah. Okay, the pad you grew up, was there musical instruments?
There was an organ that my mom played occasionally, and I took lessons on it for a little while, but I absolutely hated it.
You mean the experience because of the teacher, right? I mean, the people I've had on show, usually it's piano lessons, but it almost drives them away from music.
Yeah, this was tough. I mean, it wasn't like a Hammond or anything. I mean, it was just this old Lowry organ, where no matter what you did, it sounded like you were in a church. And it was just, it just did not work with me at all. You know, I took lessons on it for a while, and it just bored the crap out of me.
Okay. And what about at school? Were you in the marching band or the choir, shit like that?
Yeah, we didn't have a marching band in my school, but I or a choir that I, well, there might have been a choir. I'm not positive about that. But I was in the school band and in a, you know, there was a school band that was mostly brass-based, and then there was another one after that. There was kind of like a symphonic thing that I ended up becoming part of.
And let me ask you this. I ask everybody this. First record you bought with your own money?
The first record that I can remember buying was, it's a toss-up. It was either Legacy of Brutality by the Misfits, or it could have been an early Aerosmith album.
Okay. You know, it's a Watt from Pedro show. There's no hard questions. There's no wrong answers. What about the first gig you saw, Dan?
The first show I ever went to was Fugazi.
All right. That's a good one.
It was a great first show.
Yeah. $5, so, I bet.
Sorry, go ahead.
$5, I bet.
That I can't remember.
Okay, so I'm interested in, like, not graduating high school, but after school in the afternoon. Did you get into the basement band, garage band, bedroom band thing?
Oh, definitely. That started when I was probably about 15 or 16 down in the basement. And I was in and out of, you know, various bands in school. And then after, when I was 18, I started playing in a, it was kind of like somewhere between a grunge band and some mix of punk and metal.
Can I ask the instrument?
I was a drummer.
Ah, okay. So why the drums?
I'm not really sure. I tried some other instruments at the time, and they just didn't really work with me. For some reason, I was immediately attracted to drums. I always found myself tapping the rhythm to everything that I heard on the radio, and it just seemed like a logical direction to head in.
And How did you get your first drum set?
Oh, my parents bought that for me when I was about 14.
That's pretty cool because, I mean, number one, you know, of all the instruments, it's kind of the noisier one, but and then letting you practice at home. So I guess when you did the bedroom, garage, basement band thing, all the guys came to your pad.
Yes. Yeah. Most of the time, yeah.
Now, were these just jam bands, or did they end up writing material or doing gigs?
When I was, the bands that I was in high school, there was some original material, but a lot of cover songs. And then in that band that I got in when I was 18, it was all original material, and we did gigs and everything.
Can you remember your first gig?
A little bit. It was at a club in Albany, New York, called Bogies.
Oh, yeah, I remember that. Howard ran it.
Yeah.
And it's several clubs after that, right? Valentine's and Low Beat. And great cat. What was the name of your band?
Let's see. When
this Bogies gig,
The first band I was in when I started gigging was a band called Plaid.
And how was that first Plaid gig?
For me, it was terrifying, but it worked out pretty well. It was a band that was existing. It had already existed for a while, but they lost some members and then regained some new members. So it wasn't like it was a brand new band.
Ah, so you had to learn other people's tunes.
Yes.
Yeah. Did you get involved with composing? Because, because the conventional wisdom is like drummers don't write song, which is so fucking stupid.
I agree. I think that anybody can write a song.
Yeah.
In bands that I was in later, I wrote some songs and, you know, wrote parts of other songs.
Okay. You gave me this, some more Loss. We'll get to Loss, because this sounds a lot different than I imagined. Than what was going down at Bogies in them days. This is all the world's a stage, but I just worked the lights.
found one scientist described electron micrograph images of E. coli cells. So we all, every asshole and on their own, are moonish. And why not? We eat moon pies and moon cakes and moons over my hammy, stare with moon eyes at moonstruck honeymooners, drink moonshine and maybe moon the moon, and get mooned back by the great and crusty buttock in the sky.
Thank you.
Watch for Pedro show. That chunk of music started off with Loss, doing All the World's a Stage, but I just worked the lights. Then brand new from L666, L6661, appropriate, from Anchorage, Alaska, Muskeg, Mudsuck, Redwood Creek, Noisuke after that, brand new, Moon Festival. And finally, Loss again with The Turnin'. Right, correctly, what? The Turnin'. Okay, so how long does your shift in Plaid last?
Let's see. I started there in 1993. I was probably in it for maybe a year, year and a half before the band broke up.
And then what's next for you musically?
I ended up in another, it was kind of like a, I'm not sure, maybe a post-punk kind of thing called Snollygoster. And that was kind of a mess, but that was, well, that was a real mess.
Now, why do you call it a mess here, Dan?
Well, because when I started out in that band, I was beginning a lifelong battle with severe mental illness. And I didn't really understand that I was going through that fully at the time. And I think it was extremely difficult to deal with because of it. You know, I was starting on medications and all kinds of things like that. And man, they fuck with you.
I can imagine.
Medications are just terrible.
Now, let me understand this. Did the music make the situation more intense, or did it help?
Music always helps.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking, because it's always helped me when I do have mental challenges.
Yeah, but at the time, I was going through things that I didn't know. Like I have occasional manic episodes, and I remember the last show that I played with that band. We were playing on the radio, and I remember that I was feeling really good through that, and I remember thinking I played awesome. And I remember, well, okay, if the band's gonna crap out, you know, I'm really glad that we ended on this note. And then a couple of years ago, I found a recording of that, and I was manic, and I did not know. And it is a mess. I was just awful. I wasn't in time. I was playing about twice as fast as it needed to be. It was just a disaster, and I had no idea that happened until recently. And I just feel horrible about that.
Let me understand. What about the other band members? Did you guys have like a debriefing after the gig? Nobody gave you feedback?
We had been having problems. A lot of it there were conflict of interest things, and there were things that they were doing that I wasn't thrilled with. And with my head just being a disaster, it was doomed.
You know, the way you're speaking, you kind of knew this was the last gig. So there was like communication problems in the band.
Yeah, I just didn't get along with the other guys that well. And, like at the time, they were into drinking and that kind of thing, and that wasn't really my gig. So if they were going to be doing that, I didn't want to. And when we were playing shows, I really wanted to play with sober people.
Sure. I can understand.
Because it was so important to me. And, of course, during that last show, I sounded like I was just, I'm on acid or something. I have no idea what, it was just so embarrassing on so many levels. And I just feel awful about it. It's been stuck in my head since I heard it. And it's bad.
But there was like no closure with the other members. They just thought, well, so be it.
We talked about it a little bit, but okay. I think that at the time they thought I did that on purpose.
Oh, okay.
And I didn't know it even occurred.
Sure, sure.
You know, I thought that it was great. You know, I thought it was a really good show and that we all came off strong. And then, you know, so there was definitely, they weren't happy. And,
No, I've had stuff like that.
I didn't get it until now.
I've had memories where I thought, like, for example, an address of a pad. I'm convinced I know the address, and then I go by the place, and it ain't the address. It was like some false memory just established itself, and That's trippy how that works.
I have a lot of that and really debilitating memory problems.
Uh-huh.
So my life depends on other people kind of guiding me somewhere and GPSs.
Well, what happened with you music-wise after this last gig with these guys?
My parents moved away. I moved out of the house and moved into an apartment. And it was a small, really shitty apartment. And I couldn't play drums there. Even I had electronic pads, and that was too loud for them at the time.
Whoa.
So I couldn't really do it, and I just started doing keyboard stuff.
Ah, okay.
And discovered electronic.
Because most of the music you gave me, it seems, is towards that angle. So I wonder when that came. And it came out of practicality. You just couldn't play the drums anymore in the apartment.
Well, it came out of practicality and just a real desire to do it. You know, I've been a really big fan of industrial music. You know, uh-huh. I started about the same time that I got into punk, and I had all this emotional stuff that I was bottling up and dealing with. So I needed a way to translate that and to get that out in a way that wasn't destructive to me.
Yeah. Yeah. And so, like, not the bass, not the guitar, but keyboard, synthesizer.
At the time, yeah. It was keyboard, a lot of pedals, and, you know, playing synthesizers, but not very well, and then a lot of programming into a DAW.
Well, you were learning, right, by doing.
Yes. I had no idea.
No instruction, right? You were just stumbling along. Okay, interesting.
Yeah.
And did you give, like, a name to this?
Yeah, the first electronic music that I started to make serious was Loss. I had a working title for something a while back, but nothing was released. It never went anywhere because I didn't have a computer powerful enough to be able to do what I needed to do.
So these three tunes that I played from Loss, are they, any of them from this period or are they later?
The Turning, is from 2005. Let's see, All the World's a Stage, that was from 2004, and that was from the first EP that I was giving out to people and selling and using as a promo and stuff like that.
And how were you recording? Because this was a recording project. Were you doing gigs yet?
No, no, not at all. I had no idea how to gig with that, but... For the first full-length album, I really did the best I could to try and create it in a way where I would be able to do an appropriate number of things on stage during a song.
Okay. And what'd you use? Like, you said your pewter wasn't powerful enough, so how'd you record it?
Back then, it was, the Lost stuff was recorded on a proper computer.
Okay.
That's when I had a better software and a computer that could more or less handle it.
Yeah.
But I still, whenever I needed to check a mix, I had to export it because whenever I tried to play it live, it would just be clicks and pops because it was overloading the PC.
Too much, too much weight for the PC's brain to take.
Way too much.
Yeah, but still, I like this idea of learning by doing. Because then, you know, you find out the wall where it is by pushing against it, not just arbitrarily, oh, there it is. You actually have to push against it. And do you think this was helping? I mean, we're talking Man Alone. You don't have to deal with other band members, correct?
Yeah, it's not like I have an aversion to working with other people, but at the time it was something that just needed to be me. You know, I needed it to just be me. I didn't want anyone else's influence on it. It had to be the way that it was in order for me to get it out of my head.
Sure. And sometimes it's not just working with other people, but it's who are the other people, right? The chemistry. And that can be really hard to find, lucky or bad luck.
It can be brutal.
Yeah, right. I mean, I found it too. And in fact, what I found... Like, if you've got a difficult piece of music, practice will help. But chemistry between people, I don't think any amount of practice can help with that.
No, it either works or it doesn't.
Right, correct. Interesting. So Does Loss ever do a gig?
Yeah, I have gigged. It's been a little while.
No, but I'm like in the timeline of this story you're telling of your history.
Yes. I at that time, I think after the first album. No, actually, yes, I played a few gigs before the first full length came out.
And what was they like?
The first one was terrible. I just had no idea how to do it live.
Sure.
I was doing my vocals. I was running them through a guitar processor. And I brought that with me to try and do the vocals there, but it was all kinds of distortion on it. So it just wasn't something that could be used live that way with a microphone running directly into it.
Okay.
So the first gig was completely without vocals.
Okay.
I was not thrilled about that.
Okay. But what about the other parts of the contraption?
That went all right. You know, okay. I had a synthesizer that I had a keyboard connected to so that I could play it, you know, MIDI controller, and lots of noises and pedals and stuff like that.
I'm interested in you being a drummer. Did you get into sequencing?
Yes, I did.
Okay. Because, you know, there's different ways electronics, right? You got these kind of like just modulations going, or you can like organize, like you said, programming beats.
Yep.
Yeah. And did you find the corollary between an analog drum set in, you know, pewter world?
I haven't done a lot of recording my drums into my computer lately. And at the time that first album came out, I couldn't because of the space I was in. But, yeah, I do have pads that I do play, and I do program some of the rhythms and the drums, but others I actually, you know, I play them in with pads.
Yeah. And, I mean, Loss is still an ongoing concern, correct?
Correct.
Okay. So what happened was, because you've given me all this other material, I'm thinking you're taking, like, other lanes, parallel universes to express yourself?
Yes.
And when does that begin?
That started, let's see, the first Fail release, which was a harsh noise kind of thing.
Fail.
That came out in, I think, 2005.
I got some Fail I'm going to play next hour. Yeah, okay.
Okay.
And, yeah, interesting pieces. I mean, what about this with the length? I mean, some of these babies are like 35 minutes.
Yeah.
Was early Loss like that? Really long, extended pieces?
On the first full length, I mean, my songs tend to be long, but not usually 35 minutes. That is specific to a project. There's a whole reason behind the timing. And
yeah,
the
we'll get to that. Disconsolate, right? Yeah.
That's one of them, yeah.
Yeah, right. Yeah, really. But some of these, like you said, the turn-in is early, and that's kind of shorter. No, that's a little shorter, right?
Yeah, that's shorter. But on that album, there is also a song that's like 18 minutes long.
Okay. Which, in the vinyl world, that's like a whole side almost. Yeah.
Right.
Right, right. And how did these things manifest? Was it vinyl? Was it cassette? Was it MP3?
The early stuff, the first Loss and Fail releases, those were 3-inch CDRs.
Oh, I remember those. Yeah.
Yeah. And then the first Loss CD, it was an actual press CD.
Okay, CDs. And look, we're at the end of the first hour, January 29, 2024 edition, Wap Pedro Show special guest Dan Fox. Hold tight for hour two! January 29, 2024, it's the second hour, Wap Pedro Show.
When visiting family on Long Island, we usually take the ferry that crosses from Bridgeport, Connecticut to Port Jefferson. I've made it my habit, heading in both directions, to stand on the uncovered upper deck until the ship clears the harbor. The air can be bracing. On a hot day, it's always refreshing. On a cold day, it's a test of my endurance for those 5 to 10 minutes. Except for harbor markers and an occasional shoreline structure, I'm seeing a view across the water that has been unchanged for eons. But the reason I'm standing there is for the sound of wind. There isn't necessarily a breeze. It's the air displacement caused by the movement of the ferry through what could be perfectly calm air. What I hear is air being caught by my ears. If I turn my head, the sound changes or goes away. It's the interaction of me moving and the air caught by the auricles on either side of my head. It's a sound for me alone.
Thank you.
Watford Pedro Show. We start off the second hour with If, I guess his name of Proj, and this is a remix of I Only Miss You When You're Here. Then we had David Greenberger and Tyson Rogers. They got a new release. It's called Autobiography, I think. David is talking about his history. And The Sound of My Ears. He had me read a spiel. He's got all kinds of cats, maybe 40 little pieces. And then FFI Digital with 180125. FFI Digital being a Dan Fox Proj. Enlighten us, Dan.
FFI Digital is something I wanted to try and create something that didn't sound like it was made completely with software, but it is made completely with software. Even the vocals are software.
What was the idea behind that?
I'm not really sure. I just kind of had a whim and just kind of did it. And it's funny that the lyrics to that song are actually just it's the instruction manual for a death metal pedal.
You know, I had a project called Cuz, and it goes back to this joke, you know, why does a dog lick his balls? Because he can. So why not fucking do a project with you? What, you don't want it to sound like software? Using software. What about this If, Proj?
That was created out of necessity. In 2008, I had a devastating house fire, and I lost everything.
Oh, fuck.
You know, I lost all my gear.
Sure.
So that was something that that was a project that I did. I was feeling very melancholy.
Yeah, I can imagine.
I have a tendency towards anyway. But that, that was done when I had no hardware anymore. It just went away.
Yeah.
And I made that all with mostly free software that I found.
I'm interested because it's remixed. There was another version originally?
Yeah, which was those are the remix that you hear and the original are the only two songs that were released by that project, but okay. It is going to come back out with a different name. In the future, I had enough for a full length of that stuff.
Yeah.
But the girlfriend that I had at the time thought it was a really good idea to go ahead and reformat the computer.
Oh, I can guess what's going to happen.
Yeah, that wasn't great.
No. Well, I found in this world there's two kinds of people, those who back up and those who will.
Exactly.
That's why Wad backs up. You know, this title for FFI Digital, six digits, right? Same kind of format you're using for Fatal here. This tune I want to play, 160708. Is there something significant about the six number digit?
Those are the dates that I started those projects on.
Ah, okay. So 16 being like the last two digits of the year?
Yeah, I think it's the last two of the year, then you have the two for the month and then the day.
You know what? I use that method for my stuff because they'll sort correctly.
Right.
Yeah. If you do it, you know, month, day, and that shit, they never sort right. Okay.
That
here, let's listen to Fail. We talked about this earlier. Watch for Pedro Show. That chunk of music started with Fail, 160708, or July 8th, 2016. They sort correctly, people. Use it. Don't tell you who turned you on to it, but you can use it. FOD after that with Not Going to Start a War, and then Fail again with, this is a good, I got to ask you about the titles. When sure. do they come along? But So Cold That the City's become overrun by Roman packs of raw meat. I mean, where in the composition process do the titles come? Do they start with it, during it, or after everything's done and said?
Well, it could be either way. With Loss, when I'm writing a song, I typically start out, okay, I need to write this song about this.
Yeah, that's the way Watt is. That's why I need a title. But almost everybody I ask, they never do titles first.
Yeah, well, sometimes with my noise projects, like for the failed track you were just talking about, that's on a compilation that just came out on Kim and Bear Electrique, and the concept of the compilation was Cold.
Ah, okay.
So I just thought Cold, and then me being nuts, weird stuff popped into my head, and I wrote it down, and then you got a title.
Now, these titles that use the six-digit thing, are they kind of diary entry things? Like, this is the way I felt on this day?
In a way, especially with the Fail material, yes.
And why did you have to do Fail when you had Loss?
Because Loss, it's a musical project.
Okay.
You know, that has noise elements and things like that in it, of course. But I wanted to do something that was just pure noise and something that I could just play completely. You know, that's all weird synthesizers and pedals and stuff and just, you know, all hardware that I just tweak and manipulate to make that. And it's a way I can deal with, you know, emotional stuff like most things that I do.
And versus Loss?
Loss is a much, much, much longer project to produce.
Okay.
The Fail stuff is always, it's always just live, one take. If it doesn't work, I do it again. But with Loss, it's a DAW project, so I have...
You build tracks.
And tracks.
Yeah. Okay, understood. One is like kind of almost capturing a performance in the moment. The other one is like building upon performances.
Right. It's kind of like an instant gratification worth, you know, versus gratification you have to wait a really long time for.
Sure. What about gigs? Does Fail gig?
Yeah, recently I started gigging. Probably in about 2016, I started playing shows here when I moved down to Florida. And then, you know, and I've been playing some recently as well.
Well, how does a Fail gig differ from a Loss gig?
I guess the audience and the venue.
Oh, okay.
With Loss, I've been able to play some European shows, things like that, festivals, and it's something that's a little bit more, I think, accessible than just the noise stuff.
Okay.
But the noise scene it reminds me a lot of the old punk rock and hardcore scene, where you just have these really friendly, supportive, open-minded people.
Yeah.
And
you know, people ask me about the old days, and I always tell them it was about people. I think the new days are about people, too.
It should be.
Yeah. So what you're seeing is like a community where people take turns great in front of each other.
Exactly.
Yeah. So that's why I think the idea genre is kind of stupid. It's if you have those kind of ethics, they kind of define the aesthetics.
Yeah, I agree with that. But, you know, at the same time, I wouldn't want to go there and you know, and expect an ambient show or something like that and then have somebody blow my eardrums out.
Okay.
So it's good to have, like, you know, maybe a theme to it, but they're open. You know, I mean, a show that I just played last weekend, not yesterday, but the weekend before that, it was just a show in someone's apartment, and there was nobody there except for all the other performers. And it was great. It was a really lovely performance. You know, great people. The guy who hosted it is Hal McGee. This guy has been doing noise since the 80s. Really, really cool, laid back.
You know, you being in Florida, are you aware of Rat Bastard in the South?
Yes, I've seen him a couple of times.
Yeah, I got to play his pad. You know, he's got a studio that he's doing gigs out where he lives now in an industrial park. And, yeah, really interesting. We call that, there's shorthand from the old days for those kind of gigs. We called them character builders. And if you can't play them, you shouldn't really be allowed to play the other ones, I think.
Yeah, you know, that makes sense.
Because there's a weird element that got tied to this, you know, sharing through artistic expression, some kind of fake royalty, you know, which has nothing to do, I think, with expressing yourself artistically. It's another issue. And it kind of took over this kind of, you know, the idea of gigs.
Yeah, I totally agree. And it's the same way with labels, even.
Absolutely.
Like, even in the noise scene, there are people that have just tremendous egos. And they're dicks about everything. You know, if anybody ever goes to them and say, hey, how'd you do this thing? Then they get all offended. And I try to be the opposite of that. If somebody comes to me and wants to know about what I do as an artist or in the label, I'm completely transparent. I believe that it's a lot more helpful to the scene.
Yeah. No, I think that's beautiful.
And let these good people come in and let them figure out how to sort out their stuff.
Sure.
I mean, if you're not going to do that, you really shouldn't be part of the scene.
Yeah, I agree. Look, we're at the end of the second hour, January 29, 2024, edition of Watt Pedro Show. Special guest, Dan Fox. Hold on for hour three. January 29, 2024, it's the third hour of Watt Pedro Show.
scatter weak letters onto landscape snow. Deepened, the dark defined and the fire are one and the same. Barred space taking deep purple. With the same center, keeping warm and bright, standing tall, a candle of being, solid in the faith of it, the furrow demure in the name of peace. For the sake of clear waters, grace walks gently through the world, unseen guards apparent. So gentle but there, in all her sister's faces to be found, tested by the mother, loved forever. Alive and unwanting, generations embodied. As your belief surrenders cool blue to the only worthy, awakening to a miracle more.
What for Pedro Show? Start off third hour with Deconsolate, part one of two. We're going to, next edition, people, you hear part two because I just didn't have the space. But this is Creeping Fault. And then Crane and Susan Loa, they had me do bass on this little part there of the Darkling. Yeah, tell me about this disconsolate part. I wish I could have played the whole baby, but then I would have had to like another great project you got here. You know, and I didn't want to cut that out because... Well, I love the music, but also the concept is bizarre. But tell me, hit me, Disconsolate.
Disconsolate was, I've only had that, I had an EP on my own label that I put out, and then some songs that were on compilations, but I do want to, I really could have made that a fail, you know, that stuff by fail, but it felt, because of how strongly I felt about the material, that... it needed to be something different, something that was able to be separated from everything else. It actually comes with a very long, the disc comes with inserts that have like a really long kind of spiel on it.
Okay.
At the time, I had just left my girlfriend, and it was because she was just a spiraling drug addict, and it got bad. And, you know, she actually, she passed away back in 2018.
So sorry.
In that lost song, She Zombie, is also about that song with all the spoken word part.
Yes,
that
yes.
That's about me observing her just kind of dying. I named the song after there's an old zombie movie called I Zombie.
Yeah, sure.
Where there's a guy who's turning into a zombie, but he's I think he's a journalist, so he's writing about that process. And I wanted it to be like as I was writing about the process of her just falling apart. It was just devastating. To see that. I loved her so much, and I just had to watch that, and then I just couldn't do it anymore, and I had to leave.
Like a slow motion suicide thing. Somebody, I read that about, they were talking about Bill Evans, a great jazz piano player, and his addiction, yeah, they say it was like slow motion suicide.
Yeah, I describe it that way sometimes.
Yeah.
It's just watching somebody die in slow motion, and you have to watch the whole thing, and you can't stop it. It's terrible, and I don't want anyone else to have to deal with that, to ever have to go through an experience like that. I don't know. It was just I've had some challenging points in my life, and that was one of them.
And by, you think by putting it in a context of expression, artistically, music, that helps? Because it seems like a situation that can't be solved, right?
The situation with her, it could have been solved, except that she didn't want
to
be.
Yeah, well, she had to get on board, right? Yeah, of course.
Yeah, she didn't want to get on board, but people were throwing help at her left and right. You know, I was bringing her to NA meetings and, you know, all kinds of stuff. And I was really supportive, trying to get her back in the right lane. And, you know, it just didn't happen. But I have had people that have contacted me about some of the lost material,
yeah,
and about some other material that I've had. They've contacted me and they've actually told me that I helped them through something, to know that that they're not the only one on the planet that has to deal with this kind of thing. I mean, especially when, you know, my things that are more about mental illness.
Sure, sure.
You know, the music scene is packed with mentally ill people.
I think that's one of the reasons why it's kind of a life preserver, or an attempt at reaching out for a life preserver. Because I think it's about this idea of community. You know, it's very individual in expression, but also about community.
Correct.
Yeah. Interesting. Interesting. Okay, I'm going to play the last music for this edition here, Dan. Pedro Show, last music for this edition. Started that chunk off with Mill and Pats with, this is one word, people, Flow Motion Lick Salty Stony Stream. Yeah, three E's in stream. Okay. Mill and Pats, right. And then, Dan Fox here. Very interesting title. I'm terribly sorry if that I at any time mistakenly implied that you aren't a complete moron. That was just beautiful. And then the proj name is, this is what I hear when you talk. So, I mean, I don't know what's better, the proj name or the title of the piece. I mean, they take turns, right? They kind of like a planet the same size as the star. It's revolving around. Yeah. Now, hit me to this.
Yeah, I think that some people in the noise scene are also a little too serious.
Yeah.
You know, and despite everything, some of it should be serious. But I do try to add a little bit of levity to some of my stuff. You know, I do have a sense of humor, even though I'm going through some things. And, you know, I think that's important, too.
Yeah, yeah. Okay. You gave it to, is there other pieces under this project name, or was it this a one-off?
Oh, no, that project has like 1,400 releases or something.
Now, what makes it different than Loss or Fail?
That project began when I was in a way of me trying to, it was part of my grieving process after she passed.
Okay, so it's more recent.
She was 35 when she died, which was way too young. Yeah. And that's why those tracks are 35 minutes.
Yeah. Oh, wow. Yeah, that's her age. Okay.
Yeah.
Makes sense. And
I have a completely different Bandcamp page for that, 35.bandcamp.com, and that's mostly that stuff. And I had 35 different like emotional states that I had to go through.
Yeah.
And each one of those had 35 minute tracks.
Whoa.
And that is since it just recently got through the last of them, but I'm continuing the project on with other things. But it's heavy.
Yeah, very heavy. Can you describe your composition process? Do you make demos? Do you have a trove of lyrics? Do you have use voice memo for licks? I've had all kinds of things told to me by guests on the show.
For the noise stuff, I just kind of think about what sounds I think I want to make. Then I go through my pedal hoard and figure out, you know, what I think will be best for me to achieve those sounds. And with Loss, that's a little different. Sometimes I write lyrics first and then the song. Sometimes the lyrics come afterward, depending on, you know, where I think that song is heading.
And what's next for you?
I don't know.
What's next for you?
Well, I just released on my label. I just released another a new batch of 19 releases.
Whoa.
A couple of them are mine, but they're artists from all over the world.
And give the URL of this event. It's a Bandcamp page, right?
Yeah, that it's innerdemonsrecords.bandcamp.com.
People, go there because there's a lot of great, great stuff there. And so I just put out 19? Wow. Yeah. Graham was part of that, right? Fence Post?
Yes, and also there is a Fence Post release, and also there's a collaboration that he did with a guy from U.S., and that is called, I think it's called Masterlismos. I'm not sure if I'm pronouncing that correctly.
Okay, I don't think I've played that. He's given me a few things, but that's
I think it's an ancient Greek word for preparing a body so that it can't come back from the dead.
Okay. That's an excellent project.
I couldn't hear you for a bit. My cat helped out. So
what I'm doing is I'm inviting you back on. If you got any music to bring, which I think you probably got buttloads, we can play it and talk about it. Is that okay?
Yeah, sure.
Yeah, that would be great.
This was a lot less horrifying than I expected it to be.
Did you? Okay. Yeah. I hope that didn't disappoint you.
No, I just don't think I have a lot to say. So I feel like I get confused when people want me to talk about stuff.
Well, because I listen to the music, and now there's a voice to it, a person in thoughts. So for me, I can't speak for other listeners, but for me, it's a bitchin' thing.
And also, some props to Randolph Carter.
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. Up Eugene.
He's actually the one that brought me to you directly. Okay. He's an incredible person.
Yeah,
They're both great people.
Yeah, yeah. You know, so lucky about music, bringing people together. Community, right, like we said before. So anyway, till the next time you're on the show, safe seas for you, okay?
All right.
Okay. People, it's been January 29, 2024 edition of Wapedro Show. Keep your bow!